Hey guys, welcome to episode 240 of the JV Club with my guest, Stephanie Courtney. Oh, how I love her so. It was so great to just hang out with her, and she's one of my favorite people. So thanks me for having a podcast where I was given the excuse to spend a couple hours with her. I don't have any shout outs prepared. I said that like it was like I was a sous chef. But I hope you enjoy this episode. I couldn't find her more delightful. I'm sure you'll feel the same. And I'll talk to you guys next time on the podcast.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
And so when you hold the microphone, I'm already recording. When you hold it, just like, you know, it kind of keep it around this level, I guess.
Okay.
Around this level. Do I sound good to you?
You sound really good.
You can't hear or see what's going on over here. I feel good about the levels. What if we didn't know how to talk to each other unless we were as characters? Like, of all the years we've known each other, we've only ever been on stage or on Spontaneity Nation. Yes. And so we had to like adopt.
And we have 5 minutes roles. To talk as normal people.
Yeah. That's it. That's true. We do get, but not really to each other. So like because there's no Paul F, we kind of can't even do that.
I'm lost.
I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I was thinking you are one of the people that I have known, I think, like pretty much the entire time I've been here.
When did you
meet
here?
But I can't remember. I've been here like almost 13 years, I think. Wow. 12 or 13 years. And I think I must be just because like the Matt Prices and Jason Nashes and the Sklars, those were all people that I knew before I came down here because they had done Sketchfest and stuff.
Oh, cool.
And somehow I met you very early on in that. But I couldn't really tell you where or why.
I was thinking that too. And I think it was back on Tops.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I
then
think
it probably
that was. That was it.
God, was that the first time? But God, see, in my mind, for some reason, I have a memory of like, oh, I'm so glad I'm getting to work with Stephanie on this, as
me
if
too.
I already knew you. So
maybe you had done a Joe show or something because you knew that. I don't know.
Or
I know
something I was, through. Maybe we both did like one of like Jason Nash's shows, like did something goofy on. I don't know. But you were so groundlings oriented.
Yes, I was. I was always
such a mystery
in that thing. I know. I know. And I always knew that, too. I was like, oh, friendly face. Like,
yeah.
Oh, I like her. She's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are wonderful. We're both wonderful. I guess at the end of the day, that's really all that matters is we learned early and often how wonderful we are.
Hey, great podcast. I guess put on the commercial now.
It's a real patty on the backy. It's a real patty on the backy.
But you know how you were just like that instant feeling where you're just like, oh, safe. A safe place.
Totally. And I think how long have you been here?
It's a long time. It'll be 20 years, January of 2018.
And from where did you come?
New York.
You know what? From whence did you come?
Oh, from whence? That, I feel the word when is there, which I already answered, damn it.
That's true. You're right.
New York, by way of New York. I grew up in a place called Stony Point, New York, in Rockland County. It's about 10 miles away from West Point, about like 40 miles away from New York City. So it's right in between
is
there.
West Point? Like, yeah. Is West Point Academy
like
there?
Like the military.
Okay.
Academy. Yeah.
I feel like I should salute. Okay.
Well, you quick. Should. Because I'm a lieutenant.
Great. No, oh, my.
I'm not a lieutenant.
An honorary lieutenant from just living near West Point. That's how it works.
That's how it works. All it's right. Pretty cool. Free education.
Really
you just
cool.
have to serve. No, that none of that is true. So, yeah, like on the one field trip, you get like a Broadway show. On the other field trip, you get like a trip to a military academy. It was like, choose your identity. Which one are you? But it was great. It's the Hudson River Valley, which is very pretty, and a lot of like Revolutionary War sites and stuff. So it's very nice and historical and lots of antique places. And anyway,
so it's more of a place where New Yorkers would go to relax, like, you know what
yes.
I mean, like, oh, we're just gonna head up and do some antiquing and be in the trees.
That's
versus
right.
Like a place in New Jersey where it's sort of like an extension of New York City, or, you know, has that sort of city feel.
Exactly. Our side of the river, it was interesting because our side of the river, and as I say, it's interesting, it's not going to be so interesting, the Westchester side of the river, that's sort of like the money town that was across the river from us because it had the train.
Uh-huh, that's it.
We didn't have the
train. That's American history for you.
We did not have the train, so it was quieter. it was like we got the cool songs like 6 months later. Like our radio stations got the cool songs like 6 months later.
So close. And just, well, you know, they had the train. They had the train. So we couldn't get those songs.
The radio waves wouldn't reach us.
The train delivered the songs to the other town.
I just remember like everything. I go over there and I'd be like, oh, we're different. Like I'd visit my friends over there.
Isn't that funny?
Or we'd like, you know, I was on the swim team and we'd go and we'd play the high schools there and be like, there's a jacuzzi in their locker room.
Right. It's they always had it a little bit better. The grass was actually greener.
It was.
It actually truly was greener.
Yes.
But I think that's, it's funny because I just had Zeke Nicholson. I don't know if you know Zeke because he's more of a UCB guy. But I said like the obnoxious thing of he really doesn't seem like an East Coaster to me. And now I'm going to say it again, which is I don't even know what that means.
Mm.
But I think it's just that I have so many friends from the East Coast, but I don't know why. If you had said like, oh yeah, I'm from, you know, Oregon or something, I would have been like, oh, of course you are.
Yeah.
And the reason I was saying that is that it connects with that idea of that warmth and that person you immediately click with in this city, which for me, I think it does stick out, especially in the beginning, because I had such a fear of what it was going to feel like and who was going to be here and what my experience would be and if it was going to be really stressful and threatening in some way.
Yeah. And you
and get competitive,
this,
you know?
That's it. I was going to say like the competition you would fear or why I feared would take away the niceness. So I was very worried coming here because like I was in New York for 6 years. I was in New York City for 6 years before I came here. And you know, like you work hard and then you get to know people there and they're friendly, you know, now suddenly like it's a warm, friendly place or whatever. Also in New York City, I had like my grandmother live there and my cousins live there. So it just felt not as scary.
Yeah.
And then when I came here, I was just like, oh, you know, it just feels like high school all over again.
Right.
Which is what,
yep,
this is
about. Get it. You get it. That's
and then you're like, no, it's court. Like, and if you were to think, oh, improv people compared to stand-up people, like I've met incredible people in both worlds, you know, like you just meet, I don't know.
Well,
like-minded people.
And it's funny because all the sort of walls that you break down as, again, it's the unknown versus the known, because I never went through a groundlings program, but in my mind, that was such a competitive world in comparison with, I don't know what else, I guess Second City. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like somehow in my mind, maybe I heard one anecdote from one person and you take that and run. You're like, oh, it's super competitive. It's really ugly. It's an ugly world. And then the second you meet like three other groundling people, you're like, wait, these are just total goofballs like me. And they're a team. Like,
yeah.
But do you feel like is part of that true? Like, are there moments where that feels true? Like in Sunday Company or
oh
I guess it depends on who it is
of
that
course.
You're like
the
with too.
The entire, like, what do you call it? The entire way it's set up is, you know, is a competitive sort of, you know, it's really fun. The guy, not funny. Every time I say it's funny or interesting, just to understand that my definitions of funny and interesting are very different. So the founder of the Groundlings is a man named Gary Austin who passed away recently. And he was just this beloved guy. And I went to his memorial, you know, sort of this beautiful memorial service at the Groundlings. And the way the vision he had for it was like, you're all welcome. Everyone's welcome. Because it was like 1974. And he's just like, you know, he would have a conversation with someone and be like, congrats, you're a groundling.
Right.
He'd be like, $35 a month. And they're like,
right,
what?
Right.
So that was
because he wanted to build something from nothing.
He was all about, like, he just loved the idea of like, just embrace failure, just do it. Who cares? Fail, embarrass yourself, just work through it, you know, and that whole awesome thing. And then, of course, it became successful. Like, people from that program succeeded, and then they had to somehow wrangle the company down to a certain number, and then they came up with the system of like, and so that is legitimately rough.
Right.
It sucks. But I would say the people that I met there are all awesome people. It's all people.
Yeah.
And the thing with Groundlings, I would say, I was saying this to someone who was asking sort of the same question. It's, I was sort of this like, try to get in the honor society kind of student. So I have like this A+ sort of mentality, and that worked with me because it was like, you know, you better toe the line, you better work hard, keep your head down and work. Don't even think about passing to some other level. Just work on your stuff.
Right.
For me, I'm like, yeah, I get that. And also secondly, I was older. When I took my first class, I was 28. And so I can understand, like, if you're 19, 20, 20, you know what I mean?
Agreed. I moved here when I was much older. And so I, you know, and by that, I mean that I was in my sort of mid to late 20s. Yeah. Like the middle of my second half of my 20s, probably.
Gotcha.
And same thing. I think I never really had that. And these guys know I never really had that, like, oh, I should have started this when I was 17, because I just have zero faith that I wouldn't have just burned out.
No, I would have just been so insecure.
Yeah, I've been like, what do you want me to be? What do you want me to be? I'll be that.
Exactly. I feel the same way. I had like, I'm still like an amoeba. I'm still figuring out like, sure, who am I? But yeah, the structure of it is very, it's tough, but I responded to it. And I think honestly, because I had gone through an acting school, and that also voted on like, are you going to make it to this next level?
And what was that?
It was the Neighborhood Playhouse in New York City, which was great. So anyway,
again, the most friendly name in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like Mr. Hooper's on Sesame Street, except if you had to compete against other shoppers for gum.
Yeah, and everybody wants a slot. Yeah, so it's I went to, you know, so I high school, then 4 years of college at Binghamton University, and then 2 years at the Neighborhood Playhouse, and then a bunch of years in New York City, and then I moved out here.
And so even in high school, were you into acting and
very
stuff? You were
so.
Very much.
I mean,
you knew.
Thanks.
As a kid, even?
God, yes.
Yeah. Me too. But mm-hmm. I was just doing school stuff. I wasn't like, and you weren't doing like.
No, which surprises me. And I think it's true about like, this all worked out for the best, because I really was very close to New York City.
Yeah.
I loved theater. I loved singing and dancing and blah, 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 blah. But I think my parents wisely just let it be what it was.
They weren't like, you know what? We're going to pull you right out of school and just get you on Broadway.
That's right.
Yeah.
And what's funny is, I had an aunt and uncle, again, this is really going to be
this
funny.
Is, so you guys, might want to. This is really interesting and
if you're
funny
eating or
so
drinking.
Far.
Guys, spit it out. Spit it out. So I had an aunt and uncle, and they were like madmen on Madison Avenue. They were in commercials. Like mm-hmm. they worked in commercials and stuff. And that could have, I'm sure, had they thought to do it. Thank God they didn't. I mean, right. they sort of saw that, like, you're a real handful. Like, you're a real, you really think you're like Shirley yeah. Temple. You really think you're adorable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You have some anonymity. Like, yeah. Do it all in private.
You really think you're Shirley Temple?
It's crazy.
Also, like, well, that wasn't a huge reference point for us as children. I mean, like, maybe the aunt, when Annie came out,
That felt like everyone should be in show business.
Everyone should be, every That's child. It was a failure unless she was not in the movie, Annie.
Totally. Or yeah. on Broadway, which is like, you know, I was sort of kind of aware of the revolving cast. Like, you know, someone else is Annie now, whatever.
Right,
but
right.
I never felt like, Mom, get me in there. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I think I like.
Well, that's interesting too to me, because I was definitely super into performing and stuff in school, but it never occurred to me, and this is in Tucson, Arizona, so it's totally different, but it never occurred to me to pursue like, oh, there's community theater, or like, oh, the, you know, these guys need a Tiny Tim for their whatever. And looking back, and like, I had never been to New York. I mean, I was in my 20s when I first visited New York. Mm. And so my understanding of what Broadway was just this sort of concept, and was this thing I'd never seen. And except for, you know, in movies, whatever the movie version is, which sometimes is pretty accurate.
Yeah.
But I think there was really this kind of like membrane of separation between what acting and theater meant to me as a kid in Tucson, and like what it meant outside of that. And I think as much as I was like, oh, I would love to do this, and like everyone thought like, oh, she, you know, I would say like, I want to be an actress. I think in somehow in my heart, maybe my vulnerability, whatever, there was like, there was no penetrating that membrane. That
was
like,
protection.
No, that's other people.
Yeah. Cause the thing is like, if you can have a happy childhood, like that's great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like seriously, that's going to be your protection for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You know? And like, I've got a little one now, and I'm sort of, and I'm doing a great job. No, I'm kidding. It's constant,
allow me. You're doing a great
constant,
job.
Like, you know, self-doubt, of course, but also like, you know, my husband and I were just like, okay, you know, especially those first 5 years, if we can just marinate in this little person and just make him feel like nothing else exists. Like, he's aware of the character I play or whatever, but he doesn't really know it. Like, we only, you know, we have Amazon TV. Like, we're not watching commercials. He's
not
bombarded with it.
Right, right.
Which is, like, really nice, because I think he does not like manic energy at all. Like, he doesn't even want like happy birthday sung to it. Like, he's seriously, I really feel like this isn't his jam.
Right. Sorry, keep going.
Oh, that's okay, which makes me happy.
I wonder if all of a sudden he'll just be like, surprise, I've been stewing on this and I really want to do this.
I know. There are times that I'm like, you know, God, like it, people are laughing at a joke you just said. Like I would, that's vitamins to me. Like yeah, I would have
nudging him, nudging him. Did you everyone hear that? Let me repeat it.
He said the funny. Like he's like, don't I'm dying a little inside. But yeah, I just think that's, yeah, I think you're right. Like some wiser part of yourself or something protected you.
Yeah. Do you have siblings?
I do. I have two older sisters. Jennifer,
and are they also Shirley Temples?
Jennifer was an actress and she's a writer. I don't ever remember her. Like she did a lot of theater and that's kind of why I wanted to do it. I would see her in plays and be like, yes, yes, yes.
You know.
But she was much more like willowy and leading lady and you know what I mean? And I was much more like, here's your clown costume.
Oh, not the dress?
Nope. Here's the clown costume. Enjoy it.
Right.
My middle sister did it a little bit, and she started to do more like backstage stuff in college. Like she would, you know, do that kind of stuff. But, and she's much more like her artistic side is photography and stuff like that.
Are your parents artistic?
No, not, I mean, yes, they're not, well, okay, I'll put it this way. My dad is a retired history professor. And then my mom is, like she sings like church events, stuff mm-hmm. like that. So she's got this incredible voice, you know. And just as a kid, it was never encouraged because like she's the girl of the family. Like, so her brother was like on TV as part of a chorus, like at a church, like they grew up in Hell's Kitchen and it was not, you know, they didn't have a lot of money and stuff. So she didn't get the singing list. She didn't get that. But now she's like living her singing career.
That's great.
Dream. I know. It's really cool.
That's great.
But they did meet at a theater party, which I think is really funny.
A theater party in Hell's Kitchen. Mm-hmm. That's pretty great.
Yeah, they were sort of, their brothers and sisters were both involved in this theater company. There's an actor named Joe Campanella who does like IMDb him. You've seen him in everything.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like I fully know that.
Totally.
Name.
He looks a little, to me, he always reminded me of like Roy Scheider. And he just worked constantly. And anyway, he was sort of the head of it, and you know, the lead in all the shows and everything. So they met at one of those parties.
Wait, he was the head of it and cast himself as a lead in all the shows?
Yeah, he was really good.
I guess.
And my mom's always like, I just ripped tickets. I ripped tickets. So then, yeah, that's how they met. So I figure like that's, you know, some little theater dust got on.
Yeah, there. Yeah. What is the age difference between you and your sisters?
Okay, so I'm 5 years younger than my oldest sister and I'm 3 years younger than my second sister.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so were you in the same place long enough that you were sort of like, oh, it's the third Courtney kid.
Absolutely. Like, yeah. My dad taught at our high school and both of my sisters did like really well.
My dad taught at my high school. Did you have your dad?
No, I never did.
Oh, okay. All right. I did have my dad.
You did? Yeah. How is that?
It was really fun, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I was, I was talking about this recently, but like the idea of when people put themselves in your shoes, they just imagine their own parent who isn't a high school teacher.
Right.
And they're like, that would be so weird. But like for me, I knew that, you know, once I made the decision as a freshman to go to that school, my dad was the AP English teacher. I was going to have him as a teacher.
You were
so
going to.
I was heading that way. And and again, also like English was my best subject. Unsurprisingly, because my dad was an English teacher and I loved writing and reading and writing about books and stuff like that. And my dad did a lot of really fun stuff in the class. So it was I loved it. I mean, I just absolutely loved it.
Awesome.
And I got, you know, and I feel like, I mean, it was definitely like, it was never fun to get like a paperback with my dad's red pen in his handwriting that I was very familiar with. Like, I think I bristled at that, but I also don't like criticism in general. I think I've gotten really good at taking criticism, but I was not like and I don't know how you were, but again, that sort of soft underbelly, like I felt like I needed to, you know, do well. And there were things that I was lazy about that I did well at that then it became like, if I'm not good at something, it's crushing to try because it hurts when you're not good. But I remember getting a report card, like even in grade school, that was like, she has trouble accepting criticism.
Oh my gosh. We are who we are. Like, it's so funny.
Yeah.
Like, we just are the people that we are forever. It's just, what is that, 7-Up? Have you ever seen that 7-Up series?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's so fascinating.
I know. My little guy will be 7 in a couple of years. And it's just, I'm just waiting to like,
Yeah. Did you, so were you, because for me, I don't think, I've never thought of it as like, oh, this is because I always thought I was right. It wasn't that. It was like, I desperately didn't want anyone to tell me that I wasn't great because I felt like they were right. And then I would just take it all the way down. Like,
oh, that's
one
really interesting.
One criticism, I would be like, I'm no good at all. And like, I would just shut down. Not like, I don't know how they could think that I'm great. It wasn't that at all. It was more, it was totally fear-based.
I think, because I'm trying to think of like my work ethic in high school, which of course, like, I did make the honor society. And of course, like, I was, you know, English and social studies and those things were my subjects. And then trouble with chemistry and math and stuff. I needed like extra help and got it, whatever. If I didn't have ego about the thing, I didn't care about the result.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I, like, for instance, I was on the swim team because my sisters were on the swim team because you had to be on a sport because dad wants you to be on a sport. So that's sort of like, we would be at this important away game and I'd be just be running around the halls with my friends and miss my heat, I think is what they called it. I think they called it that. And I remember
your heat.
My dad was crushed, like to his foundation. Like, I think he was really worried about like, what does she care about? Like, this won't work in life. Like, but I knew, I was like, it's no big deal. I'm not going to be a swimmer. It's fine. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I'm like, sorry, he's mad. This is the kind of mad is going to take a while to dissipate or whatever. And I remember with like theater or plays or anything, I pretty much was like head down, nose to the grindstone kind of thing. Like, I was like, okay, yeah, I know. Like, there's a lot to learn. This is a long road. I think I just knew maybe hearing stories like the Broadway people or whatever is just like, not a lot of money in it.
Yeah.
It is whatever the love.
Ballet version of like, or the theater version of like ballet, like sores on your feet and taping up your toes.
You're going to be eating ramen noodles.
Yeah. You were ready to kind of embrace that part of it too.
Yeah. I assumed, like, I remember there was a speech, who was it? Who won the Oscar for, okay, Mercedes Rule.
Mm-hmm,
and she had,
and
she won her
Fisher King.
That's it. And she won her Oscar and she was like, you know, I was a waitress for 10 years. And I just remember that. I was like, okay, that's probably going to be what it's going to be. So I just got fired again and again and again. And I was just like, okay, get fired. Like, I would just wait, you know.
God, that's great. What about the comedy side? Because obviously that leads to the idea of like failing in comedy and improv and that being very much embraced, or at least encouraged to, like, you know, don't be afraid to take a chance.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid if it's not funny, like, you know, find your way. But was comedy something that was part, because for me it wasn't so much, I mean, I love funny stuff, but again, there was like this weird disconnect where I felt like the theater I was doing was like, you know, whatever they told me to do, which was often Shakespeare or what have you.
Right.
And there was no like improv troupe at my high school, and there was in college, and I just didn't do it.
Same thing. There was no improv in my life until I was in New York City and I heard something about the Chicago City Limits.
Mm-hmm.
And that was this theater in New York that did improv. And I remember I did a show and it was fine. It was good. It was fine. Like, the guys were all like 48 years old. It was all guys. There may have been one woman. I can't remember.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking like, oh, older guys do this.
Wait, you did it like somehow you knew some of them and they were like,
oh. No. I watched it. I watched a show and I was like, that's cool, but that has nothing to do with like me auditioning for cabaret in Pennsylvania, which I never booked. Like, I thought I'd do musicals because I sang and stuff and no one else agreed with me. Like, nobody at all. Which was okay. And then I had a friend who went to the Neighborhood Playhouse with me. And after we graduated, she started to do stand-up. And it was cool because she was having fun, but she was definitely like just starting out. And already like she had like three shows to do a week. And I was like, well, that's cool. Because I knew that performing live was the thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was the thing that seemed to give me an answer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, how am I doing? Or I don't know, even like more selfishly, this feels good, you know?
Yeah.
So she was doing that and she was in front of live audiences and doing that. So then she dared me and a bunch of other people to do a stand-up show.
You can't say no to a dare.
You can't say no to a dare. So I just picked like my two stories that I tell, you know, my sisters or my friends that made them laugh. And then I remember being really, really insecure that I didn't know how to switch from one topic to the other.
Sure.
So I had a little jingle bell and I'd just be like, this is my
segue.
Like, this is my segue bell.
Yeah.
And every time I ring it, I'm, you know, and I thought this was
going to be. You turned it into a bit.
I turned it into a bit. And I was like, this is my like one off and I could use this jingle bell to get me through 6 minutes and then that'll be it. And then this wonderful guy named Peter Voris, his wife ran a room, Liz Gallagher, wife at the time, she ran a room, and she, from his recommendation, she booked me on that room, and it was called the F-Stop, and that was really cool. So, and that was like, that's really when I was like, wow, I bombed. You know what I mean? Like, because you could be in a play and you know your lines and it's going to be, right. It's going to be okay. Like, you can have kind of a dip in the energy or whatever, but you're all right. But this was like, oh, I'm trying new material. I'm excited because the first one went so well. And then you're kind of like, that was quite, like, I was a bummer. Like, I bummed everyone out. And I was like, ugh. But still, I was like, this is not, you know, this isn't what I identify myself with. So I'll just keep trying. I'll keep trying. And then my now manager, Naomi Odenkirk, and her husband, Bob Odenkirk, were in the audience one night. And I remember Liz had called me and she's like, what are you doing Thursday night? And I'm just like, oh, I'm catering. Uh-huh. And she's like, maybe cancel the catering gig. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh, okay. Uh-huh. And then I showed up. I'm like, that's Bob Odenkirk in the audience. And I did my act and he was so nice. He talked to me for like 10 minutes just about like comedy and doing stand up and what you should do to, you know. And then Naomi was like, if you want a manager, come to LA. And I came to LA.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
Yeah, you've really been with Naomi that whole time. That's amazing.
So we're talking, I think it's been 20 years.
That's amazing.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it really is. I didn't know that. I don't know. I may not have even known that you're with Naomi, but actually I think now that all, it's all sort of makes sense.
No worries. And I was her first client actually. She was like working in casting and stuff. And then she wanted to hang her own shingle.
No wonder you know where I live. Okay. That makes sense. It all makes sense. You saw improv in New York City, but then did you also start doing it in New York City or no?
Knew.
Just when you came out here?
No. So I was doing stand-up.
Because you knew it to be 48-year-old comedy.
Exactly. I was like, this is for guys.
Yeah.
From Chicago, which I guess was in my head because the name of the show.
Uh-huh, sure.
And I was just like, and that's cool. Uh-huh. You know? And good for them on a Friday night.
Yeah.
Get out of the house. And then I moved to LA because I had a manager now. And
can I just quickly say that the thing that is tickling me internally is that when you described that at first, I had very specific images that I couldn't control in my head, and it was Pete and Pete from iOS. Do you know those guys?
No, I don't.
It is like a specific. I had a really specific, like, oh, Pete Gardner, that's him. He would have been doing that. None of that is true. I don't think that's how old he is. I think that was my version of like when I first started seeing improv. I think it was true for me too. I was seeing guys who were, while not exactly that age, they were probably in their 30s and I was in my 20s. So they seemed like 48.
Older. Exactly.
And they were white, really funny guys that, you know, really quick.
All like, there wasn't a whole lot of character work going on. It was just like super, super smart. Like, rapid fire.
Yeah.
And just the 90s, just if you want to picture it more, just oversized, jewel toned, button down shirts.
So easy to picture.
With very pale jeans.
Yeah. Or, and it kind of reminds you of like,
and a white sneak.
Maybe like Ryan Stiles on Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Exactly. Right. Where you're just like, wow, these guys are fast. Like, they can just, they bounce off each other. And, you know, good for them. How do you do that? I don't know. It's impossible. I guess you have to start when you're super young and only do it. And, you know, so for me, it was an other, you know. And then, plus, I was sort of like hoping, oh, this stand-up will get, I mean, it was the, you know, what all stand-ups hate to hear. It's like, I'm going to move and I have my 6 minutes and my jingle bell. And then that'll get me.
Everybody's got their jingle bell. It just, sometimes it's called something different.
And then I'm going to trip over a trunk full of money. Uh-huh. And that's what I thought it would be. And then when I got here, you know, Naomi was just like, you're either going to be doing comedy or watching comedy every night. Just get out of your house. And I know you're catering half the nights, but just do it. And so that's when I went and saw a show at the Groundlings. And that's when I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It was Mindy Sterling and Cheryl Hines and Holly Mandel. And all the guys were amazing. Mike McDonald and Charles Rocket was the special guest. That's anyway, amazing. So you had these people, and especially just how funny the women were. Like, I was like, and they're just, it's all characters.
Yeah.
And that's what I was like, oh, I could actually contribute something to this.
Yeah.
You know? And so, you know, it's like, if you ask anyone at the ground, it's like the next day you signed up for classes, and I did too. And it just felt right. It just felt good. And that was the other thing, as far as being like an A+ student, and I was older and I had gone through an acting program that sort of had an improv, I don't know, theory behind it. It wasn't a foreign language to me. It felt pretty decent. But it's really the characters and the emotional stuff. 'Cause I was like, great. That's, that feels at home. Yeah. That's right. It's like what you're saying. Like, we can't really talk to each other without being characters. Amen, sister. And then, and even the way they would write their sketches, like, they were like, that was, you know, if you're talking about what was the, you know, the frustrations there, mm-hmm. then I would say, like, the A plus student was like, well, the more words on a page, you know, the more successful the sketch, right? Wrong.
Right.
So
right.
The thing I had to learn was like, what this place is really about is sort of a lights up kind of performer. And, you know, you know, do, don't tell, you know, show, don't tell, that kind of a thing. And I just remember Melissa McCarthy seeing one of her Sunday company shows. And she did, the only thing she said was welcome to Walmart for like 2 minutes, but she was dressed as, I mean, you can imagine, she had a hat that was also an umbrella, and she had like a huge Big Gulp, and she had a lawn chair, and she had magazines and a table. Like, she had set up a little living room in front of the Walmart, and people be like, oh, I'm so sorry, welcome to Walmart. Uh-huh. And like, she wouldn't let them talk, and she'd just like, you know, get in their faces until they finally left. And I was like, oh, it's just much more visceral than mental and stuff. So anyway, that's sort of what that place is like. If there's any sort of, what's the difference? You know, you hear all these improv schools, and you're, what's the differentiation? Or that's
right.
That's one.
Yeah. And when you were, would your family classify you as the baby? You know what I mean? Would they be like, oh, she's the baby. Definitely. All right.
Definitely. For better or for worse, I was. And also, I was, you know, sort of had the ditzy kind of label, I think, put on me as well. Just because I think when you're the youngest, you're the clown. Mm-hmm. There's really nothing else to do but observe everybody else's dynamic and then try to plug yourself in there and, I don't know, get attention or, like, soothe tension or whatever the job is.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I don't have siblings, and I'm so interested when just to see who follows in their siblings' footsteps, or whether somebody is like, well, you know, I wanted to be different because my sisters had already done that, so I decided to do this other thing, which, by the way, I sucked at, but at least it was my own thing. You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's an interesting dynamic, is sort of seeing like that you must have had a good, I would imagine that you would have a good relationship with your sisters. Just, you could see that just by virtue of you doing the similar stuff.
Oh,
versus
definitely.
Being like, oh, I gotta be, you know, I gotta go do something different.
I looked up to them so much. And also you just see, I think it was like a pass the baton thing where I looked up to them and I wanted to do that, but also that felt right. It just felt right. And then from there being in it, I was like, now I just want to be my own person. I don't want to be anything like anybody else. I just want to, you know, do my own thing. And yeah, but it started off with like, I want to be that.
What was your school? What was your high school like?
It was really a football high school. Mm-hmm. It was North Rockland High School, Red Raiders, the Panthers. It was a real big high school. I think there was like 500 in my graduating class, and meaning like a couple of, I don't know, 1,500 or 2,000 that go. Anyway, a lot of people. So, and it had a theater department, which was great. And the theater department, you know, got very little money to do the plays, but we had this really great guy, Mr. Roth, and he would put on a straight play at the start of the year and the musical at the end, and I was in all of them. I'm carrying a spear, whatever. Mm-hmm. I didn't care. I would show up to other people's rehearsals. I would just...
Really?
Oh, my God. I just loved it. I loved everything about it.
Yeah.
It just felt great. And then, you know, I did that. So that's, you know, 8 plays in 4 years or whatever. And then the summers, I would always kind of just feel lost. I'd just be like, I have to mark time until like the next play.
Yeah.
So I definitely needed to like strengthen other parts of my personality. So when I was in college in junior year, I had the opportunity to go to France on like, you know, like take a semester in France. And I was like, I remember thinking, it was so lame. I was like, well, this is my last chance to see if I'm good at anything else. And I'm not. I just went there and like.
Had you been taking French through high school?
Well, yes. But also when I was 3, my family moved to France for a year.
Oh, I don't know if we talked about this.
No,
I did a summer semester in France.
Oh, where?
But in high school.
Where'd you go?
I was near Blois. I was near like, I was in the middle of the the country. I'm trying to think of the closest place. Like, I was above Tours and I was near Orléans, I guess.
Yes.
Just kind of in the, a lot of chateaus around where I was.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
I was in Avignon when I went, when I had my semester there. And then when my, it's really cool. In the 70s, they gave sabbaticals to high school teachers if you applied.
That's great.
I know, it's crazy. So my dad said he wanted to get his master's in European history. So he filled out all the forms and they approved them. So he had a year.
Yes, please.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And he packed up all of us, and my sisters were 7, 5, and I was 3, I want to say. And my mom began her master's in French. So she's just great at it. She's
And my mom taught French. My mom's a French professor and French teacher. Yeah.
My dad was a history teacher.
Yeah. But no, I know, but that, I mean, like, it's still
no,
weird.
No, I know,
like,
but it's,
there's like weird links to...
We're related.
I think we are. That's why we felt so familiar to each other.
You're wearing half of a locket.
Oh my God, it is the other. Oh, it's the same half.
Oh, never mind. Oh, where's my other sister?
We'll find her.
Good luck. Let me know if you do. So we lived there for a year in Grenoble. And then I was like bilingual immediately because I was 3.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it just goes away. You know what I mean? And so when I went to Avignon, like, believe me, I was the least gifted person in the entire. And so it's funny because I already had my identity as, like, I'm an actor, and I've got, like, I'm kind of known in my college as, like, I audition for all these plays and get them, and, you know, and then I come to the city and they're like, it was just,
was there an idea that you were going to do
not at all.
I would say that's what the experience I had there was like. I immediately was not totally sure who I was anymore because it's such a different culture, and the language thing is so tough. It really kind of became like,
it threw me
loop. Yeah, I don't know who I am here.
Yes,
I know I'm an exchange student.
Yes.
Like, that's what I feel like I am here.
Yeah, like I'm like, I would go to these places. I also ate like Olympic amounts of bread and cheese.
How could you not?
And then I think I outgrew all my clothes. And then I was like, outgrew as if I was like growing. As if at like 21, I like grew, 2 inches. And I remember like, I was so sad. Like, I really looked like Gerard Depardieu. Like, I couldn't afford a haircut. Like, no makeup. And I'd like mope around France because I felt so bad about myself. And then there was a place where they sold like jeans by the pound. And so I went, like, bought like men's jeans, and I cut them into long shorts, and I had this bright yellow rain slicker, and I would just like ruin family pictures. I would just like mope in the background, and you're like, let's take a picture. Oh wait, let's not take a picture.
Oh God.
Like, wait till sad sack passes.
Oh God.
So yeah, when I came back, I was like,
oh my God,
like, let me audition for anything.
I mean, but like, in fairness to you, how could you not eat a bunch of bread and cheese?
Oh my God.
Particularly if you're feeling, because I'm glad that I went when I was 16 and my metabolism was still what it was, because my host mom, the first morning I woke up there, which I think was like 48 hours later, because I was so jet lagged that I slept an entire night and day, and then like had dinner with them, and then woke up the next morning and ate breakfast. But like, on that first day, she sort of gave me a choice of what I was going to have. And there was a pain au chocolat there sitting there. And I was like, I mean, I'm gonna eat that, of course, and like a bowl of
heavy cream,
fresh milk. Yeah,
just delicious, just full.
Never
fat,
heavy don't cream. Put it in the fridge. It's fresh from a cow's body, like warm.
Those bacteria are good for
you. Bowl of milk, yeah. And because that's what I chose the first morning. That was what was waiting for me every morning that I got up. So that was my breakfast every morning, and that was like par for the course of the entire day. Like, what could I put inside me that was bread, cheese, or chocolate related? The baguette at the meal would be like, can I just have my own baguette? Is that something that
is
I
that
can
cool?
do? Yeah,
I can do it.
I mean, I just loved the food. So I would have done the same thing, I think, 100%.
Holy
I just
crow.
Was lucky because I was a little younger.
I think my host mom was just perplexed. After a while, she was like, she had a little 3-year-old grandson, and he'd say in French, like, your French is worse than mine. Grandma says your French is worse than mine, and it hasn't gotten better.
I don't like this kid. I want to be on the record when I say I don't like them. Did you have other, were there other kids around? Like,
no one as miserable as me. I think, like, yeah, there were. I just remember, oh my gosh, there was this. Okay, so the year was 91. There was this girl. Oh my God. She was just, I don't know. She was from Texas, which is a different animal.
And I was there in 92. Isn't that funny?
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
The locket. The locket. Oh, my locket's dated 1992. No, 91.
Oh, wait. Okay. Can't wait to find her, though.
Yeah, she's out there.
There was this one girl who was just terrifying, and she was from Texas, and she would put up signs. She had this accent, so I'd always read them like, "Get fit in France, not fat." And she'd have these these aerobics.
Oh,
classes.
Wow.
So we would all, us miserable.
She figured out her identity.
She did.
Right,
man.
Quick.
I bet she's a billionaire. Seriously.
She probably is.
I bet. You know, she'd be like,
jerk.
I can't go to that party this weekend because there's an aerobics festival. And then she'd ask.
An aerobics festival.
And she'd like point to some girls in the class, like, would you please come with me to the festival? And like her finger would pass over me. And they're like, I'm like, fine. I don't want to get to the aerobics festival.
I have jeans by the pound to buy. Thank you very much.
The cheapest way to get a pair of jeans.
How big is Avignon?
I'm not sure of like that kind of. It's small.
Like a small city or like a big town?
It's a big town.
Yeah.
And it's, but it was considered a city and it's walled. There's a big wall around it. Now, I'm going to say this is interesting, meaning it's not. But
so far, the walled-in city is very interesting.
It is very interesting. Yeah. It's like a total medieval city.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, so I guess the Pope was banished from Rome. And, you know, they were all killing each other, all the popes and wannabes. And so one of them came over and built his own palace, the Palace of the Popes, which is beautiful. And then the French king was very suspicious about what was going on there. So he built his own palace across the river from that palace. So it's really cool. Yeah. There's a lot of awesome history and it just looks medieval.
Mm-hmm.
It's you're back in time. It's lovely. And then it's famous for the bridge Sur le Pont d'Avignon.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a half a bridge. For some reason, they just never finished it. Those French.
Lazy.
I mean, come on. They vote well, but.
Please. They vote well. Oh, they almost didn't vote well.
I know. That was scary.
Do you find yourself defending the French to people? Like when people get complaining about, maybe you don't ever hear that. Somehow I always end up hearing people being like, ugh, the French. Not just in the typical sort of like, I went to Paris and they were mean to me, but in the sort of like, I feel like I defend them a lot.
I do. I like
even though they do kind of drive me crazy.
They
in the way that you're like, I get to say that because I was there and I love them as people.
I think I'm so embarrassed by my behavior when I was there that I was like, I just sort of like, whew, I dodged that bullet. Like maybe no one there will remember me. You know, so I feel like the problem wasn't them. The problem wasn't them.
I love you, God. I wish to be able to listen. If I were like as famous as the most famous person we can think of, I would really want to use that to my benefit of being like, listen, this is an APB out for all families who traveled to France in 1991. I need you to look in the background of your photo. If you see a person skulking around back there
in
wearing
the brightest
bright yellow slicker,
and
please
long jean shorts,
yeah, to put together like an album for you of all the family photos that you appeared in.
Oh please, that would be amazing. You know what,
what a pleasure.
Not only will I find that high school picture for you, I will find a picture of me from La France.
Oh please do.
And I will send it.
I'm begging you, please do.
It's shocking. It's shocking. I feel like it was a 5-month cry for help. And then I was like, well, you know, maybe my parents will kind of forget I'm here and I'll travel. And they're like,
yeah.
They're like, Stephanie, you've spent
Something
all our
feels
money.
Like it's, yeah.
They're like, you're coming home the day after you graduate from whatever, the last day of class. Pack your sad duffel bag and get back home.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like you had like a French romance.
No. I don't think I was like identifiable as man or woman. But when I came back, also, this is so funny. When I came back, I had missed all the auditions for summer stock. So they were like, well, you can work in the costume department. So even then, it was good for me, though, because I was like, I was sewing costumes, which I'm also terrible at. Surprise, surprise. I really am unhirable. Like, I'm just unemployable. But and I would go backstage and I'd help dress the actors and stuff like that. And that was, you know, that was good for me. It was sort of like, just, you know, you're not just one
hot
thing.
Shot.
Yeah, you're not a hot shot.
Yeah. Like what? And what about high school? Did you date in high school?
Not so much. I mean, my dad was a teacher there, And not that that did anything. I shouldn't blame my dad for my lack of dating. I just remember going, I was just shy. I was in this like little pack of girls, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And we just all like went to dances and didn't talk to anybody and like sure. went back home. But I remember standing online for the PSATs and one of the other teachers there was just like, Hey, did Mike ask you to the prom? And I'm like, what? Your son? No. And he's just like, that's stupid. I was telling him. He's shouting this. And there's all these people behind me. He's like, I'm telling him. She's a nice girl. She's a nice girl. What's wrong with him? I was just telling him. I was like, that's okay. I just want my paperwork.
Oh,
I just.
No.
So I was never like blessed in that way. I was more like cursed in that way.
Did you have crushes on people?
Oh, yeah. Like total mad crushes on people. But they were all just like completely silent. And I think maybe even doing plays was a way to like, see, this is the way it should happen. These words are written
right,
out.
Right. And would they be guys? Was there a particular type that you were like, would you be attracted to like a football player from afar or
no.
somebody that you were in a play with that you're like, I'll never tell him my true feelings?
They were terrifying. I kind of like anyone who reminded me at all of like Jason Bateman, like anyone who was like, you know,
sure.
Irishy, freckled, told jokes.
Yeah.
You know, that's when I was like, yay. But like that, even that, they were just like, nah.
Yeah.
Not you.
God damn it. You kind of described yourself also just now.
I know. That's so sad.
I was just looking for the male me, you guys. Is that weird?
Someone with a locket. Someone cap a locket.
So you had a huge crush on Jason Bateman, I have to assume. What oh no, I hated him. But I really did.
I did. I remember one of his first shows. What was it? It's Your Move. Do you remember that? No, you're too young.
No. Well, I know about that. But I just, there's a weird swath of like, people always laugh at me because I can follow them up to, I'll be like, oh, I love Silver Spoons. Oh, I love.
Yes.
And then they'll name like three shows and I'm like, I don't know what that is. And they're like, they were at the exact same time. Like, I think one followed the other. How did you? I've never seen an episode of Growing Pains.
It's okay.
But people. but it is kind of weird that like I was very into certain things, but then there were things that were like the sister or brother show of that I was like, I don't know, somehow I never saw it.
Take it easy on yourself. It probably means that like you turned off the TV, which is a very good thing.
Maybe.
Kinda. He was in Growing Pains. It was about chess. No, it wasn't. It was
that's disappointing.
About like the wisecracking son of like a single mom, and like he had to watch out for his brothers and sisters and her, and like he was just the most wisecrackingest wisecracker, and he's so good at that.
He's so good at that, even at like 12.
I'm just like, what the heck? But I remember Silver Spoons, and I remember, oh, that guy's so funny. And then I watched that, and then he had like a whole bunch. Like he had like four in a row. Like the guy never stopped working. You know.
Yeah.
So I would always like keep an eye, just because I was like, how do you be that relaxed and funny and not... It didn't look like he was trying. It didn't look like he was trying to please anybody.
Yeah.
That he just knew how to be funny and, like, did it, you know? And I watched all the other shows, too, and I loved it, you know? I was like...
Did your crush stretch at all over to Alex P. Keaton, since he was also kind of a wisecracking?
No.
He didn't have enough freckles, probably.
No, he didn't have enough freckles. He's not Irish enough. No, I think maybe it's the comedy thing. Maybe it's the type of comedy thing.
I don't know.
It's funny. I was trying to think of who else. I can't. I'm old.
I don't think I liked him. I can't remember if I liked him on Family Ties, but then Back to the Future, I was like, oh yeah, he's great.
Amazing.
Like, okay, I love him.
Yeah, like he's another person who can handle himself. Like you could just tell that he's up against the funniest people in the world. Like
Tina Yethers.
Christopher Lloyd, I'm thinking the movie. You rat.
I'm a huge rat.
You son of a... I just want to tell your listeners that I am rubbing the belly.
We really... They're being very, very good.
They're being amazing.
Sometimes she just gets real up in your face. Like, I'd like you to put that microphone down and only pay attention to me. So this is a good... This feels like a good combo. Did you grow up with animals?
No. Well, sort of. I begged and begged for a pet. And then my mom let me keep a caterpillar in a tissue box. Back and we all watched it die.
Perfect.
It never got a chance to turn into a moth.
No.
And then I begged and begged and begged, and then finally I got gerbils.
Oh yeah.
And then
these are all it's all a series of begrudging pets. Like, what is the bare minimum I can say yes to? I had a goldfish for a while for the same reason. Like,
did you bond with it?
No, anything I ever had, it's funny because my mom didn't have, like, there was a point at which she didn't really have the same, like, custody of me, and I was more with my dad, but she was always the one who was a sucker for pets. But that what that amounted to was like one goldfish that she kept alive and like she loved, and then a pair of mice that she allowed me to get. That was pretty early. That might have been earlier before. We kind of moved backwards and got the fish because the mice were so much work. She really tended to those mice. They lived so much longer than mice were supposed to.
And also with the gerbils, we mistakenly got a male and a female.
Oh, no. That's such a... like a cliche that you think only happens in like a TV show or something.
It was Lord of the Rings because they would, I mean, if that mama was overwhelmed, which she was, because she would have like two litters, she would have like two litters like a week apart. She had like, and so she would just kill them, and she would just, or like we would like in her cage and be like, there's a litter in there.
Oh no.
It was,
you stumble upon it. Was horrific. When you're cleaning.
But the thing that broke my entire family's heart was once she only
didn't
had,
you separate them?
We never thought of that. As a matter of fact, my sisters would like sit in front of the cage and waiting for them to like start having sex, and then they'd be like, stop it, and they'd bang on the cage. And that was birth control. Irish, Catholic, birth control. Stop it. All right, I'm going to bed now. I'm going to trust you too. The whole family's going to bed, and we're going to trust you to do the right thing.
That's amazing.
Well, one time she only had one little tiny baby, and it got all the milk, and it was, I can't even describe. Imagine like a tan cotton ball with like two tiny eyes and like the little tail. Like it was, we called it Butterball. It was the cutest thing.
Well, what happened to the others?
I don't know. I think we gave them back to like the pet store and they were like, damn you. Damn you. And I don't know. I think we tried to like fix it. It was so terrible. So that did turn out to be tons of work. And there's no good guy in that. It's just everyone's failed. And then like a lot of lives just destroyed. And so and then finally I begged when I was 14 that we got two cats.
Oh, okay.
And that was great. That was really cool. But my mom, she should have like given in when I was younger because we got two cats. 4 years later I go off to college. I was the last one.
Yeah.
And now she's got these, you know, too. But she, of course, you grow to love them and everything. But now, and then once I could, I always had a cat. And then now we have a dog.
And how did you get into the love of dogs? It just sort of...
I've always loved dogs. I was never in a position to own one. I don't think I ever had, like, the time or the money. And then when I had the money, like, we were just moving around a lot. And then we had a little tiny baby. And then... once he got older, we were like, this is crazy. We have a yard. We can do this. And then we got the sweetest dog.
You love your dog.
I love her so much.
I will refer you to past episodes of Spontaneation for conversations about your dog as well.
Oh, yes, exactly.
From what I recall.
Check it out.
Oh, remember, was it just that last one that we did together where, oh yeah, Paul was like nervous about saying my dog's names as if there was like one of those like protective celebrity things where they're like, I don't talk about my daughter. But it was like, oh, I can, the anonymity of my dogs is probably not important.
When I take my dogs to Disneyland,
yeah,
it's a family day. I want privacy.
Please don't put
a t-shirt with your dog's name on your dog.
Please, I'm begging you.
No, I'm not going to promise no photograph. What, can I tell you something? All right, so when we were trying to adopt a dog,
yeah,
we would go to the shelters, and there was once where we found this little husky puppy, and we're like, oh yeah, that's the one, and they wouldn't adopt it out. They said, have you ever owned a dog? No.
Yeah.
You don't want a dog. I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah,
we do. And they're like, well, a husky, you know, I guess a husky, there's known to be like door dashers and like high energy.
So here's what I'll say about that. First of all, I totally had the same experience. The only reason that people were more flexible with me was because I had Scott and he looks like he might have husky in him.
Yes.
So I really leaned into that.
Yeah.
But I had, and I'm sure I talked about this like on the podcast a few years ago when I was going through this. But there was like a husky rescuer that, I talked about it with a couple of girls kind of in our world who are very active in like dog rescue and stuff like that. And they were like, oh yeah, some rescuers are hoarders. They're animal hoarders and they can't, it's the sickness and they won't part with the dogs that they rescue. It's not the same as, you know, just a, you know, a kill shelter or a not kill shelter. It's like these people, particularly when they start specializing in certain types.
Oh.
And so there
that
was
makes
a
total sense.
Yeah. So there was a dog that I want, there was a husky that I wanted to adopt. And she just kind of stopped. Even there's this whole process she wanted to go through, and then she kind of just stopped contacting me. And I was like, but I have it. Like, I've successfully had a dog at this house for 10 years. You know what I mean? Like, it's, yes. This is, there's, I don't know what else you could possibly need. And I took some girl saying, you know, not some girl, but it took like a girl, a pal saying, you know, I think you need to let that go because I know what you're talking about. And this person's never going to give this husky up. So, but, wow. So they can't, yes. I mean, they are one of those breeds that people say, you know, watch out. This one's real specific. She is definitely totally weird and like very specific. She's extremely lazy. So she's not like super restless. And she ran in the beginning. And so I thought, oh, well, I've done it. They're runners. Like, just like everyone told me, you right. know, this dog has never tried to escape. My dog found a way out of the yard very early on. Yes. And so the first year with her was kind of agonizing in the sense that she did take a lot of work. But I will say that now we can take her off the harness. I mean, we don't hike her off leash just because I don't feel comfortable with that. And you're not really supposed to anyway. And if something happened with her and another dog, I would just never forgive myself. So we always keep them leashed. But, you know, there's a point where we can take the harness off her in the driveway and she'll just trot inside. She won't think about, I mean, there's no part of her that she doesn't look longingly at the open road, you know? And I never thought it would get to that. Wow. And just gradually she's in our pack now and she doesn't want to be anywhere else, you know? It just, you know, I think that's that, maybe that it's that first year that people worry about, like, you really have to put the time in, but
an imprint.
The way I feel about her is there's a richness to how I feel about her that I don't think I could have had we not gone through all that together. I know that sounds dumb, but
no,
you know what I mean?
Not,
it's different,
not...
because he's just like he's such a well-behaved dog. You know, there was never any like, oh, this is excruciating, but it's a different kind of bond. I don't know.
It
weird.
Is like, I would say that puppies are jerks. holy crow. Her mama was a total rescue, and the wonderful family that adopted the mama had surprised 9 puppies Christmas morning. Mm. And this family, they're just amazing people. And they found homes for every single puppy. And so she was one of them. So we had her since she was a tiny little thing. But holy crow, like the, you know, my husband would like hold her at night. And I just hear him go like, like all night long. He just hum and like hold her. Or like, you know, by her crate and just hold her paw. And I remember thinking like, I'm not like, she's adorable. Puppies are adorable. But I miss my cat. Yeah. Like I miss just relax. And it does. It takes about like a year before, she's okay now.
Mm-hmm.
Like she can like entertain herself. She can go outside and lie down. She doesn't need to look at me and paw my knee. And
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
But she's awesome. And you're right. Because that's like suddenly now you're at a place of trust and calm. And it is worth a lot.
And I got her when she was 4. So I don't even know. No one knows what her life was like before. So she can be real. She can be skittish about certain things. And I think that that's probably more an indication of something she went through before she, you know, was at the Pasadena Pound. But you know, she didn't, at least your dog gets to like develop its entire environment around you guys and kind of, you know, bonding early.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, that's amazing. I got to get into this MASH game because I've talked to you forever and I want to do this MASH game. Do you ever play MASH?
Yes, but remind me.
Mansion, apartment, shack, house. and then we're going to do categories. I'm customizing the categories. There are ones I like to ask repeatedly, and then I'm going to try to come up with ones based on what we've talked about that I think you would enjoy.
Okay.
So for the first one, to give you an example, let's do 3 musicals that you didn't get to do on Broadway that in this alternate universe you get to do, and, you know, doesn't have to be gender or age specific. It can be like, I wanted to be Hamlet, or I wanted, you know, anything like that.
Ooh, my gosh. Okay. Oh, holy crow.
And sometimes improvisers have the worst time with coming up with fast answers, which is, so I want you to know if that happens, you're not alone.
Thanks.
Even though you would think that it would be the opposite.
Because I'm trying to remember actual plays.
It's also the A+ student in you that's like, there are correct answers for me personally and me alone. Only I can give those correct answers.
It
what
has
are
to
they?
Be right. Mm-hmm. It has to be right. All right. So let's see. So the 3 plays, Broadway plays that I wish I could have done. All right. Well, I'll say Once on This Island is one of my favorite plays, but I would never be cast in it. It's an all black cast.
Guess what?
Oh, I'm in it now.
That's right. Possibly
in it. Got it. And then, I'm trying to think of plays that I've seen, but I don't have to.
No, you don't have to.
Okay. Oh my gosh. Like, this is so terrible. All right. There's a play called Holiday that I enjoyed.
Great.
Let me think. All right. Damn it. Spit it out. Wow, it's amazing that I'm just drawing a blank. And the third play would be, I want it to be a musical.
Yeah. What about all like the classics? Yeah. None of them really appeal to you?
It's so funny because this is no, but because even though I wanted to do musical theater, like I hated like gathering around the piano singing musical theater. So let's think.
So this is a category I should never have assigned you.
No, never. So
great.
Damn it. Oh, okay. All right, I'll say Sunset Boulevard. Fine.
Oh, great.
Fine.
God, I'm glad we got through that horrible exercise of a thing that I thought I was giving you this wonderful gift of having been in a musical on Broadway.
It's and like it a turned job. Out to be.
It really is. Okay. Okay. Let's do three places in the world where you have a vacation home.
Oh.
If getting there is no problem.
Maui.
Sorry. That girl could use going to Maui right now to relax a little.
Fire Island. Because I went there as a child.
Wonderful.
And so France. I'll go ahead and say not Avignon, probably Loire Valley.
Yeah, that's where France. I was. I should have just said the Loire Valley.
You
should have.
That was okay. You ate up like 5 minutes of precious.
I really did. I named so many cities that no one's ever heard of. Good lord.
Tours, Orléans.
That's the hardest one. That's like the weirdest one to say. Blois. 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 Yeah.
It was a bit of a challenge. I think that more, however we feel about the French, I think they hate us. Like just the names alone. They're just like, try to pronounce this, stupid.
You asshole.
Stop eating.
Okay. Okay. Next category is let's do three like magical pets that you can have. It can be like something you ride, something you hang out with. So it doesn't even have to be like a pet. It could be like a companion.
Oh, okay.
And you can do it if you know that, you know, your son, there's like a certain thing he would like. I don't mind if you want to take it on for him.
So super cool. All right. So there's this book that he loves called The Snatcher Book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this little tiny, it looks like a little ferret with wings.
Oh, cute.
No one has ever read to him. So he like steals all the books.
Aww.
And burrow down.
It's The Snatcher Book.
So this little
His
rabbit.
His name is very literal.
It's true.
Should I put The Snatcher Book?
Yeah, The Snatcher Book. And then he gives the books back and he makes friends with the village.
Okay, well then he might have to change his name. He's gonna have a whole identity crisis. The give a book back. Okay, The Snatcher Book, got it. Two more.
Wangdoodle. There was this book that Julie Andrews wrote called mm-hmm. The Last of the Really Great Wangdoodles.
Oh, great.
And I remember I love that book. A Wangdoodle.
A Wangdoodle was first brought up in the original Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory movie.
Yes.
and in the book.
But
I'm
said they were fierce and terrible and they ate all the things. But she wrote it as a sweet, mystical little
the
creature.
Wangdoodle.
The
Wangdoodle. I love
Wangdoodle.
It. These are great. Gosh, they're so obscure. I thought you were going to be like, a dragon.
A cat. let me think. A saltine. Can that be a saltine? That
yeah, that's a really mystical pet. Oh my god, this is great. Okay, a saltine, perfect.
But with like Google eyes, I imagine
perfect.
It.
I'm gonna draw it for myself. Okay.
They only last minutes and then they like crumble.
That's great. Okay. Okay. Next category is three foods. In this life that we lead now, there are things that are not good for us, whether it's allergy, calories, anything like that. In this world, those same things are nutritious, wonderful. You can have them in perpetuity, snap of a finger, can be as specific as like the pain au chocolat in France, or it can be just like pizza, you know, a general wash of deliciousness. Three.
Okay. An ice cream scoop of truffle butter.
Great.
Like a generous ice cream scoop of truffle butter.
Yep.
Let's see. What else? Speaking of like just their love of chestnut, like marron, there's this chest. I like things that have been processed. Like I like they have this chestnut, like you squeeze it out of a tube.
Mm-hmm.
And here's my other squeeze out of a tube thing. All right. At IKEA, in their grocer's department, they've got this like row kind of squeeze it out of a tube stuff. And I love it.
Oh, okay.
I love it.
Do you want me to do, so would you want me to do
the chestnut thing that you squeeze out of a tube, and then the roe salmon roe that you squeeze out of a tube? And I honestly think
this is amazing.
I'd be okay on a desert island with all those.
Okay, roe squeeze.
and the salt.
To write down.
And I would eat the salt.
All due respect to your wonderful husband.
Yes.
I'm a little worried that you're going to put, by the way, some of that roe on that saltine pet and just eat it.
Oh, I will.
Okay, great.
It's already happened.
All due respect to him, this alternate universe companion or just kind of sexy times. And it can be like a character from something, or it can be an actor, or it could be Jason Bateman, yeah, obviously.
Very cool.
Obviously.
Like, if I said Jason Bateman, I think I would get a restraining. Like, I think it would just be creepy.
It's come to that, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to work with fictional achitic dudes. So there is, let me try to think. I'm trying to think. Oh, shoot.
I know.
I'm kind of betraying the fact that I haven't read a book in a very long time. And that ain't good. Okay, so there's this, what do you call it? Graphic novel, mm-hmm. comic book or whatever. And it's called The Unwritten. And mm-hmm. there's a lead guy in there and he's cute.
Okay, great.
Put it there.
Okay, I got him. He is down there.
He's down. All right. And then, okay, one of my first crazy crushes is there's this old 1930s version of A Tale of Two Cities, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. the movie.
Yeah.
The actor's Ronald Colman, but not him, the character, yes, Sidney, yes. Sidney Carton.
Yes.
The drunk lawyer who gives up, sorry, spoiler alert, everyone, gives up his life to save this woman he loves.
Great. Great, great, great. Okay, final one.
Tis a far, far better thing I do.
Tis a far better place I
go to than I have ever been. So let me think. A third one. Oh, shoot. The saltine. No, I'm only kidding.
I'm worried about you.
I'm trying to think if there's another character that I love. I like to keep it nice and fictional.
Mm-hmm, I understand.
That's some old music. That's some old music.
That's great.
I'm trying to think, man. I'm trying to think if I've seen a show. Oh, from The Killing, mm-hmm. Joel Kinnaman's
yeah. Oh, yeah.
character,
yeah,
yeah, yeah, I yeah. thought was just yeah. the most
great
sad, rain-soaked puppy of a
That's bird. Right.
It's just so good.
That's perfect. Okay, great. All right. Next category is let's do in your home. Suddenly there's a magical extra room and it can be for any purpose, any size. Just it's there. Three rooms that you could do. And it could be totally fantastic or it could be just very practical. I know you need a sewing room because I know you love to sew.
No, I don't. honestly, what like the practical side of me is like just have a room with like a Stairmaster. Like just... That's the one thing that I could kind of use.
Okay, exercise room.
Yes.
Sadly, you have to come up with two more.
Oh, okay. And then...
But I mean, you could do like a room where you like walk through the door and you're in a forest. You know what I'm saying? Like it could just be like...
Oh, I like that. All right. Then I go through a room and I am in like 1930s Prague...
Oh, wow.
Like a noir
yeah.
spy movie.
Great. Mm-hmm. Last one.
And then the last room. The last room would be, I'm just trying to think. All right, there's this room at the Huntington that's really beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's like completely... It was like a total carved ceiling,
mm-hmm.
but they stripped it from paint. So it's this intricate but natural wood.
Mm-hmm.
It's just everything is paneled and carved and just really pretty.
Great.
I'm going to do that one.
That sounds really good, actually. I said that like it was a food I wanted to eat. That sounds really tasty right now. That room sounds delicious.
It's made of truffle butter.
truffle butter. Okay. Second to last category is... three, well, let's see, you know, you said the 30s Prague thing that reminds me of another perennial favorite, which is three movies that you can jump into at will, okay. live with those characters, hang out. You're not reliving the plot. You're just in that world.
I love it.
And nothing bad can happen to you.
Okay, then The Third Man.
Great.
Dial M for Murder.
Great.
I like that a lot. And like A Christmas Carol with Alistair Sim.
Oh, my.
I like old movies.
Yeah, you do. This is wonderful.
I just do.
We almost watched The Third Man last night.
It's you would not have regretted it.
I really need to see it. Instead, oh, we just watched, and I have never seen it.
It's wonderful.
Yeah,
like, it's oh my God! Wait, it not only is you know Orson Welles amazing and Joseph Cotten's amazing, but okay, I'm putting myself on the spot here. The one that plays the police captain, just watch everything he does. He is amazing.
Okay,
Leslie Howard. That's
Leslie
name.
Howard. Okay.
Oh, holy crap! He's okay, so good.
Well, this is going on the roster. The roster. Okay. And then the last one is three real people from history, authors, musicians, actors, comedians, anybody like that, that living or dead, that you can kind of, you have a, sort of the bat phone to, and you can call and just talk and like, they love to hear from you. They give great advice, like that. That's like, in, you know, inspiring or fun.
Wow. Okay. Golly. Let me think. Okay. Well, Billy Wilder.
Great.
Gene Wilder.
Great.
I blanked on his name because I'm like, it couldn't be the last name, but it is the last name.
I did the exact same thing. I was like, I wonder if she's going to say Gene Wilder. Is Wilder right?
And Jan Hooks.
Great, 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 great,
rest
great.
Rest in peace. I love her.
Yeah, me too. Okay, great. And then I just need you to like sort of, I'm going to do that little kind of squiggle thing that determines the number I use to cross stuff out and give you your MASH future.
Okay.
So just for right now, just tell me when to stop.
Okay. Okay, stop.
Okay. I almost ran out of room and I think you saw me wince. I'm going to pause this.
Oh, no.
Do some calculations and come back with your future.
Me God. Bye.
Bye. We need to hear your full and unmitigated, unencumbered response to this. I think you'll be pleased with this.
Okay.
First of all, I want to congratulate you on your work in Once on This Island.
Thank you.
It feels vaguely inappropriate.
I'm just glad they gave me the chance.
But great work.
Glad they gave me the chance.
Finally, a white person gets to do something for a change.
Come on.
I want to congratulate you on your... now, listen. I can't control mansion, apartment, shack, or house. I just can't. So you did get a shack.
Oh, okay.
But the shack is in the Loire Valley.
Okay, that's good.
You're just going to be out there roaming the hills anyway.
I can wave at all the tour
besides,
boats.
Like a shack in the Loire Valley, that might be like the mistress's shack connected to a chateau.
I am not complaining.
It's like a nicer house than ours. Yeah.
Any of it.
I want to congratulate you on your ability to just get Billy Wilder on the phone whenever you want. I'm going to extend that to you can hang out with him in your shack in the Loire Valley.
Make a heartwarming screwball comedy.
Yeah, it's going to be great. You can also step into Christmas Carol with Alistair Shim. You can step into your extra room in your shack. is this kind of wonderful? I mean, you're basically you've been given in a whole other city because you've stepped into 1930s Prague.
Okay, excellent. That's good.
So that's a lot of traveling you're able to do with very little effort.
Okay, that's right.
And I want you to know that you are able to enjoy that with the Killings Joel Kinnaman character.
He's gonna be so psyched.
He's gonna be so peppy in a way you've never seen him before, and. For sustenance and companionship, I want you to know that you have the roe squeeze with you, the tube of roe, and that I'm dangerously afraid you're going to eat your pet saltine cracker, which you did end up with.
Yes!
Your pet saltine cracker! Oh, criminy.
Thank you. That sounds like a wonderful life.
Oh, you really have something to look forward to, finally. Stephanie Courtney, thank you so much for doing
the
podcast.
So much.
It's been a long time coming. I'm delighted. I know from Spontaneous Nation a little bit about where people can find you, but I would like for you to say it here, too.
Absolutely. Every Wednesday night, 8 o'clock, I do a show called The Crazy Uncle Joe Show. At
I've
the
had
Groundless
the pleasure of doing it.
Theater.
It's so much fun.
Janet, please do it again. You're wonderful.
I'd love to.
And also, what else? I don't know if you're watching TV. I'll probably
You'll pop up. You'll be seeing. You'll see her whether you like it or not.
Whether you like
She's
it or not,
get right into your
I'm
world.
There. If you're playing Scrabble,
are you on social media and stuff?
I just
ish.
Just began.
Okay,
I did an episode of At Midnight.
Uh huh.
God bless.
Oh, I want to go on At Midnight with you. That would be so fun.
Oh, I'd love
I'll tell Bart too.
Oh, I would love it.
I'll
oh
tell Bart too. Let me what tell an you asshole. I will ask Bart if he's open to the idea.
But I'll tell him.
Chris Hardwick, yeah.
And I'll tell him like this,
and
lady.
You tell him and shake your fist at him.
I had 33 Twitter followers when I began the show.
Amazing.
And at the end of the hour, I had like 500.
Oh, that's great.
So well, not the end of the show, like a week. Yeah. It took like a week. But I cannot believe that. So that's my Twitter. That's my Twitter presence.
Great.
I don't know.
You're going to get, listen, you're going to get individual attention from Stephanie if you follow her on Twitter. Individual attention.
A compliment will get you a like.
Look at her. She smells some sort of wrapper. There's something in the garbage that she doesn't understand why she can't access. So I'm going to get into that with her in a moment.
My husband just gave me this book all about the science of how dogs smell, which is really how they see. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, I would very much like to read that.
Unbelievable what they smell. I'm getting a kiss. I got a kiss.
Okay, guys, listen. I will talk to you next time on the podcast. I'm going to let these two ladies make sweet love to each other, so to speak.
Bye.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.